AnselMinutes.com. It's Ansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 123, recorded live Wednesday, July 23rd, 2008. Support for Ansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RED Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks social networking with Daria Bossinger.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm sitting here today at Microsoft Corporation on campus in Seattle with Daria Bossinger, a program manager on the Windows Live team.
Yes.
Thanks for sitting down with me today. I know you're a busy guy, and you've got only a little while to talk to me today. I've been noticing that you've been blogging a lot lately about social networking sites and stuff. And I know you're on Facebook and Twitter. And what other sites do you use?
Actually, I don't use that many. Like Facebook, Twitter, FriendFeed. Oh, yeah, I use FriendFeed. Flickr. I don't know if Flickr is a social networking site.
It kind of counts. It's turning into one, isn't it? I mean, they have enough feeds. I'm finding it really difficult to manage all of this kind of, I guess you could call it content. It's not really, it's like flotsam and jetsam. It's not really content, but producing all this stuff, and it's all available via an RSS feed, but it's ultimately just turning into a river of news that I can't really consume fast enough. Like Twitter, I've got like 300 people that I follow, but ultimately it's just like the top five tweets that I happen to look at that moment. Is this flood of information going to become a problem? Are there any ways to manage that? I mean, is this smart filtering agents? What are some ways for us to manage all of this? Because I see that we're putting lots of APIs on top of this flood of content, but I don't feel like I'm necessarily gaining any control over this mess. I'm curious if you have any thoughts about that.
I don't know. Like, I look at what like some of the stuff that Facebook has done, where it seems like, well, because I don't know for a fact, it seems like they try to make sure you see the most relevant content from your friends, depending for some value of relevant.
Yeah, speaking as a user. I mean, we're both just users of Facebook. We don't know anybody.
Speaking as a user, it seems that they do that. As a user, you know, like, I've always found that interesting because it's hard, like, without being able to read my mind, you don't know what the most relevant content is to me.
They've got that, like, thumbs up, thumbs down TiVo thing.
Oh, they got rid of it.
They got rid of that now? How do you tell people that you care about a particular piece of content?
You don't, because that was actually pretty ambiguous, because when you thumbed something up, it couldn't tell if you, well, it wasn't clear if you were thumbing up the person, that type of content, or that particular piece of content. Like, if I thumbed up a photo that Scott took of the Transformers movie,
right,
it's not clear whether, like, I like Transformers, I like Scott, or I like photos.
And that's kind of like a classic usability problem, because like on the TiVo, you know, if I like to watch, you know, America's Next Top Model and I give it a thumbs up, suddenly I get the Tyra Banks Show and Queer Eye.
I've had that happen.
And TiVo is like, no, bad TiVo, bad. I don't want to watch that. But at the same time, I don't think that my wife or my mom really wants to go and put in, if Transformers and Not Scott and Dari and, you know, no one's going to build queries. So it seems like the usability problem is thumbs up, thumbs down on one side of the spectrum, or, you know, SQL for Facebook.
Yeah. The one thing I've been trying recently is Pandora.
Is that the music suggestion?
Yeah. So Pandora actually, like, they just have a thumbs up, thumbs down interface, but somehow they figured, like, at least for music, it does, like, a pretty excellent job of figuring out, like, what you eventually like and what you don't like. But they claim to have put in a lot of work into it. They claim, like, for every song they have on there, they have musicians who have tracked over 100 qualities of that song.
Really? You know, there was a thing called Mood Logic. If you remember that, it was called Mood Logic, and it was an iTunes-looking, you know, Chrome thing that you would run, and it had slider bars where they would basically look at a song and they calculate like a hash, like they get a SHA-1 hash of your MP3. And then for every SHA-1 hash, they would say, oh, well, he's got this, but it was more of an audio hash. It wasn't the actual bytes. It was like, yeah, it's clear that we're both listening to Norah Jones, but it's they're not the exact same file. And then you would, in mood logic, draw the slider bar and you'd go happy, sad, upbeat, downbeat, low tempo, up mid tempo. And they had some heuristics, but it was only like 8 or 9 options, and they would charge you like $20 to opt into this thing. And then it would kind of fix your, and this was like 3, 4, 5 years ago, even a long time ago.
Yeah. And the problem with that, which is like the classic usability problem, and what Pandora's gonna, has figured out how to get around, is that nobody cares enough to micromanage their taste that well.
Like, exactly.
There's no user who's going to show up and say, you know what? I follow 50 people on Twitter. I'm going to rank them all. Right.
No. Who's like, my best friend?
Because that's what you really, that's, as a software developer, that's what you really want. You want like, hey, I really like Scott. I really like Omar and Mike. You know, TechCrunch, if there's nothing else, show me what. Right. Like, that's what.
No, that's right. I mean, that's a sixth grade thing to do, right? In sixth grade, we all write down our best friend and our best friend, but adults are not going to micromanage their life to that level.
Yeah. And until we can figure out how to fix the usability gap, that's always going to be a problem. Pandora's figured out that there was no way you could get users to do it, but the set of like popular music is finite. Like, it's not like a massive, like, you know, the songs on the top 200 on the Billboard charts, maybe there are a couple hundred songs a year.
Right.
So you could probably get some folks to sit down and try and figure out what all the qualities of these songs are.
Right.
But on the other hand, like, who's going to sit down and figure out what all the qualities of Scoble's tweets are?
Yeah. But isn't that when crowdsourcing? I mean, one of the things that everyone's talking about is crowdsourcing. Like, the game Spore that everyone's talking about, the new Electronic Arts game, is a creature creator game. And it's built in such a way that there's going to be an infinite number of creatures. So how are they going to seed this world with creatures? They can't possibly hire people or even outsource this kind of stuff. So they do crowdsourcing. They made it fun. And then they make the Spore creature creator. And I guess they've had like 1 million or 1.5 million unique creatures created. Not random, but crafted, like, by people who care. And then I heard that there was a CAPTCHA. I forget the name of it. I thought it was like something CAPTCHA.
ReCAPTCHA.
Yeah, ReCAPTCHA. They give you words in there. They basically give you a CAPTCHA widget in JavaScript, and you're actually digitizing books that have been scanned in.
So you could say that what FriendFeed is doing is something similar to that. Like, traditionally, people have tried to use crowdsourcing on like finite sets of content. Like, what Amazon does is pretty much crowdsourcing. Right.
The Mechanical Turk.
Like Mechanical Turk, or even just their ratings. Because I have some song. If by the time 150 people have rated it, there's some sort of quality. You can go 150 people have rated it. They also highlight the most negative, the most voted on negative
report. I love that feature.
And the most voted on positive.
Right.
And between the rating and the most voted on positive and negative, you can see the pros and cons, mm-hmm. and kind of the general weight of the song.
Yeah.
Where like it breaks down for social content or River is that you're not going to get like 100 people voting on every single tweet that you see or every bit of content that you see in Twitter, yeah. or Facebook. But FriendFeed, with the like feature, they do get like people, there's a low friction way where people can go, hey, here's this piece of content is cool. And with the fact that they kind of bubble up the stuff that you like, mm-hmm. there's a chance, although small, that if enough people in your network like it, you know, you'll probably like it too.
Right.
And if there's a whole bunch of content, we bubble up the stuff that people in your network have thought was interesting. And that's how they're trying to address the kind of the flood and noise problem.
Yeah.
And I think I haven't used the service long enough, mm-hmm. to see how that scales for non-geek content. Because the problem with their current user base is that the kind of content they share is the kind of content that lots of people, you know, would care about rating. Like, well, not just would care about rating. It's pretty objective to rate too. Like, lots of people it's easy for lots of people to rate a video that Scoble posted up or an article on TechCrunch. When you get to like more intimate social information, like Debbie changed her status message and Bob threw up some baby photos and Kevin just wrote a wall post.
Right.
How do you get the crowd to rate that stuff, right. for me?
How do you throw a Reddit and no one shows up? Did you really have Reddit?
Yeah.
Or a re-edit. I'm not sure. It's Reddit, right?
I think it's Reddit.
Yeah, it's like, I think what you said about non-geek related content. I mean, there's like Dig and there's Reddit and they're all basically the same thing. It's the idea of downmodding something and saying, I like that, I don't like that, bury it, for all kinds of content, right? And when there's enough people, a Blockbuster or a Netflix can start to exploit that knowledge. But this is all either geek related, meaning we care deeply enough about it, like Reddit, or it's popular culture related, like a movie. But for regular Joes, like the content on like about.com, right, which is a huge pile of content that's basically like a Wikipedia style, you know. It's a pile of two or three people are deeply interested in this particular topic, and those two or three people will argue about it and get that out there. But two or three isn't enough sample size for me to have any confidence in either the quality or relevance of that particular chunk of content.
Yes, and it gets worse when it's like personal content, right? Like where, you know, like the two or three people are like, you know, the person's mom and their cousin and maybe you because you went to high school with them. Who determines if that content is more interesting than some other content from somebody who you went to high school with?
Yeah.
Right. So the friend feeds model is interesting, but I wonder if it can, if it scales when they don't have a geek audience. Cause they've talked about being a household name. So, and if they were a household name like Facebook, and Facebook is wild because, I'm always amazed by who I see on Facebook.
Like, oh yeah.
There's, you know, people I went to high school in Nigeria with. There's some guy who dated, I was just friended by some girl who dated a friend of mine when he was like in the 10th grade. Yeah. Right? Like, how do you, like when that's your user base, how do you make sure like the most relevant stuff from the people around them?
Right.
It's one thing when it's a user base that has content that is easily objectively or semi-objectively rated. Like when it's an article that Scoble wrote or, you know, a Google video about or a YouTube video about some event or some happening, it's easy for a bunch of people to go, okay, this is funnier than that.
Yeah.
Right. But when it's personal content, and it's a lot of personal content.
Like you were saying on Facebook that you're getting friended by people from way, way back in your life. Like, and it's becoming so popular. My dad knows what Facebook is, which is almost enough to make Facebook not cool. My wife would not get on Facebook for the longest time. Like, you've got to go on Facebook. You've got to go on Facebook. She's finding like fifth grade, sixth grade people. And they're having chats and stuff. And they're putting stuff on their wall in Facebook. But it's not in any way like they put up a rap video that was specific to the town and the neighborhood that she grew up in Zimbabwe. So
exactly.
Her tiny little slice of like people who went to girls' college in this neighborhood, you know, in the between 90 and 93
yes.
care about this content. That is our target audience. It's like that scene in The Nerd with Steve Martin where it's like if you win, you get, you know, between the left side of the Cupid doll and the right of here and the third shelf down, and you know, and it basically comes down to you win these chiclets out of all of this amazing stuff. They don't need to be down-modding or up-modding
yes.
their content.
And that's the one place where the crowdsourcing model – I don't see how the crowdsourcing model will work.
Yeah.
Like you really want – like because to your wife, that content is really personally relevant.
Yeah.
But no matter like how many people you get to vote on it – in fact, getting lots of people to vote on it may actually give you the opposite from what you want because lots of people will down-mod it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if you actually opened it up and said, here's my feed stream. Please up-mod and down-mod. Yeah.
But all of these things also bring up a really interesting concept because we want to make the idea, and we're using the term upmodding and downmodding as a vote of confidence or a vote of no confidence for those of you who aren't into the social parlance. But the idea that we want to make it effortless, right? Like one of the things I really like right now is uservoice.com or getsatisfaction.com. They let you vote for a feature and a product effortlessly without logging in. And that right there is that's the barrier. But then you get people making dig bots and Reddit bots to try to artificially upmod and downmod stuff. So then there's a whole class of really interesting problems about determining whether this is a human being cheating or not. But then there's the issue of trust. I'm starting to distrust these social networking sites more and more. Like I recently logged into a social networking site that I actually won't mention because they're very kind and they fixed this problem. But it said, you know, welcome to our website. Hey, you probably use LinkedIn. Tell us about your LinkedIn account and we'll find out which of your LinkedIn friends are using this thing. And I was like, oh, that's so helpful. So like a schmuck, I put in my LinkedIn password and then, you know, 1,200 spam emails later and like three irate phone calls. Like, why are you sending me this crap? And then, of course, and then actually what happened was, so many people from my, 1200 person LinkedIn database signed up for their thing that it overloaded like the for loop, the straight for loop that they wrote to like display that page. So I crashed their server. And they since said, yes, that was, you know, not intent. No one intends to do this, I don't think. Like, I don't think they're really, do you? I mean, do you think that they're sitting around going, here's how we're going to spread virally?
I hope so.
Really? That's evil, though.
But, like, so the thing that
I would just assume that they had just made a mistake.
There are lots of, like, talks. And if you look at a lot of these Web2.0 conferences, there are lots of tracks and sessions about viral marketing and viral advertising. And mm-hmm. A lot of people think, when you think about the Facebook platform, applications like iLike and Flickster are held up as really, really successful apps. And why? Because they spread virally.
Isn't it now because they were the first ones? And now people, I mean, everyone wants to spread virally.
Well, they were the first ones. And they started a time before Facebook realized that spreading virally was going to be such a problem. And you know, since then, like, especially in Facebook's case, they've done a lot of things to stop applications from spreading virally. But the fact is that when applications spread virally, it increases their user base. Because, as you said, even though the application was rude and spammed 1,200 of your friends.
Yeah, they got a bunch of users.
Yeah, enough people signed up from your 1,200 friends to crash your site, right? So it's like this. It's like Scott thinks we're a jerk, but we just got 100 new users. Right? And even if Scott leaves, I bet even if just half of Scott's friends stay, that's still a win-win.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not win-win, but it's still a win. Like they still come out ahead, and that's why that happens. And it's unfortunate, but it'll continue to happen as the same way spam is around.
Like, yeah.
As long as there are people who respond to that kind of
solicitation.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think that there's karma though. And I really believe in karma in all things. Like I was joking with a guy yesterday that if you tip better at Red Robin, if you tip better at Red Robin, I believe that you will get better parking at the mall. I've always believed that, you know, like, so I tip and I get awesome parking spots. I'm like the guy who parks next to the handicap spot always because I tip well. And I think that these Web 2.0 sites are learning that if you screw up, it could be the end. Like Facebook Beacon was a really rough time. I mean, they went around, they fixed it. But I mean, did you freak out the first time you saw a beacon?
So I never saw it, but I did hear about it, and I talked to some people here who had beacon show up on blockbuster.com. Mm-hmm. And it was such an absurd move.
Yeah, I mean, I logged into Blockbuster one morning and added something to the top of my queue, and this little piece of toast, and by toast I mean that little box that pops up the lower right of your screen, pops up and said, we're sending the information to Facebook that you like, you know, something that you don't want people to know you like, or whatever movie you're renting. And I wanted to reach into the screen and snatch that little box of toast. And I immediately started digging around Facebook to figure out what the privacy setting was to turn that off and couldn't find it.
Because there was none when the feature shipped, which is the really awesome and absurd part.
And I remember you would post something about people are spamming about not just join our social network, but maybe information like where you are. There was a location-based spam that went out to SMS recently.
I think the name of the service is Looped. It's an iPhone app. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was reading – was it – I forgot whose blog I was reading. But I was reading some blog. Mm-hmm. Maybe in Sarah Lacey. Maybe not.
Yeah.
And you know, it was about this application that would – an iPhone app. That was, so it would look in your phone contact list and send out like messages saying, hey,
Why
don't you try out this app?
They can look at your phone contacts because they're there on the phone.
Yeah, because they're there on the phone. It's like an API on the phone.
Right? Yikes. So I didn't realize that they had that much power.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's kind of – because everybody has phone numbers that you really have for an emergency. Like I have like phone numbers – like in my phone, I have phone numbers for – our operations folks, just in case we have a life site issue. But it's not, I'd be completely embarrassed if like some Sunday while I was messing around with some iPhone app, this guy gets an SMS and it's like, hey, why don't you try out this new cool social network?
Right, like your dentist gets spam from you.
Yeah. That's exactly what they did. And again, it's because they know it's successful. Like they know, like just like that site that spammed your LinkedIn.
The karma, though, that's going to bite them. I mean, the crowd will turn on them. Just as the crowd can help you, the crowd can crush you quickly.
That has happened to some sites. I believe Plaxo Plaxo is an example of a site that, you know, did that to grow. And then when they were trying to take it to the next level, like, there was just so much bad karma around Plaxo, the brand Plaxo, that, yeah. You know.
I thought you were on more social networking sites than it turns out you were. At the beginning, I'd asked you, and then I'm starting to realize a lot of them are duplicates. Like, everyone wants me to join Plaxo Pulse.
Plaxo Pulse, yes.
But isn't that pretty much LinkedIn, which is...
Plaxo Pulse is like LinkedIn plus some friend feed-like features. So, I try out a lot of sites, but like I don't stick around a lot, so I'm pretty boring. Like I use Facebook, I use FriendFeed, I use Twitter, I use Windows Live Spaces.
Right. You use Zune Social?
I don't have a Zune.
Oh, dude. See, the Zune thing, actually, the Zune Social is pretty cool, but I'm trying to figure out, my wife has a Zune, and I have a Zune, but we're still learning about how this is supposed to work. But the idea is that, you know, the music that you play can appear online. But then it becomes an identity management problem, because we both live in the same house. And I think this is a really interesting thing that I like about Facebook, is that they know that we're married. Like, you can go up in our profile and it says Scott Hansman is married too. And it appeared as a piece of information. So there's something that can be done about that. The idea that it's not just me and my relationships, but it's my close relationships. The Zune hasn't quite figured that out, because we have one Zune pass and, we have two Windows Live IDs connected to that Zune pass, but the Zune itself that we share is connected to just one of us at a time. So in order to make it socially appear on Facebook that I'm listening to these songs, I have to, I think, log into the Zune as myself, nuke the Zune, resync all my content, listen to the songs, then sync again for the playlist, you know. So it's this whole kind of thing. And I think it's very complicated, just in order to show that the husband is listening to the shared Zune pass. And it got me thinking about whether social networking sites will take close relationships, family, secondary family, versus acquaintances, because a lot of the people on Facebook are my acquaintances, as a weight into the decision-making that they make and linking these things together.
So I've actually talked to people about this quite a bit. The interesting thing about that is, I believe Facebook also recently just did a feature called friendless. Friendless.
So that's separate from your friends.
Yes, you can actually categorize your friends now into like different friends.
Because there's like limited profile is the one I'm familiar with.
Yeah, so there's limited profile, but you can also like put them in any categories you want, like family, coworkers, friends, and so on. The reason to do this would be if the class of users who have this problem are users, usually adults, because Facebook's primary problem, kind of, is that it started off with high schoolers and college students, people who tend to live in one particular social context.
Right, and you would join Facebook by going to like vassar.facebook.com.
Yes, and so you only have like your college friends, and your mom and dad were on Facebook, and that was it.
Yeah. Right?
So you only had this one social context. The people that start having problems with Facebook are people, I guess, like you and me, people who now have people I went to school with, my coworkers, people, you know, who I'm in Little League with, people whose kids are in Little League, right. and then you want to manage that.
And some social networking sites just call that groups, and they have a little club that you join. But I think that the way you phrase it, social context, is not necessarily a group. A group might be a dark line that I can draw around a group of people, but a social context is more of a dotted line.
Yes, and managing social context, and the tricky thing about managing social context is that it's not for every user of a social networking site. Like, again, a college student, I have some college buddies, you know, like my mom and dad aren't on here. They don't have to manage that.
Yeah.
But I have my college buddies who, you know, who send me wacky photos.
Yeah. And that's cool to have a relationship with that.
Yeah. But I also have like my boss and his boss and our VP on my friend list.
Yeah.
And I don't want them interacting on my wall.
Right. Cause you know, when you first get in a relationship, like your first serious relationship, in my opinion, the first challenge is when worlds collide. When it's like, I don't know if I want these friends to meet my new wife or fiance or whatever. And that idea that, you know, Scott Guthrie is sitting next to like the wacky guy with the keg, you know, with the hat with two beers on his head. I don't know if I want them in my friends list because there's something that could happen and they could start talking and that would be bad. How do you solve a problem like that? It's not, I mean, it's more than a user interface problem. It's controls.
So having the controls is not enough because you have to give users incentive to actually use the controls.
Yeah. Right. I mean, how many people really use privacy on MySpace?
Yes, right. So you have to give, one, you have to give users incentive to use the controls. Like if I can categorize people, but nothing happens with the categories, then I'm not going to categorize the people. It's kind of a chicken and egg problem. Right. And so the limited profile that, you know, that you just talked about is kind of a good way to get people used to the idea of categorizing people. Like, well, say, what you tell them, hey, if you categorize some people as limited versus not limited, you know, then you can have, here's all my content and here's what the people who are untrustworthy or not untrustworthy, but people who I want to give a more demure face to get to see. And then you slowly introduce that concept to people and then they can think, well, if I want, I can break this down even further. The user experience problem that I believe lots of people in the industry end up having to deal with that I haven't seen a good solution for is that it ends up being a lot of stuff to keep track of. Like if you actually did use that feature correctly, like you would have like my college buddies, people I went to high school with, my coworkers, my neighbors, my relatives, people I went to college with. And then you have to keep.
And that's not fun, right? I mean, dragging emails into folders is not fun. And I'm sure in the heck not going to take 1200 people on Facebook and start dragging them into groups.
Exactly.
Because what value am I going to get out of it?
And then at the end of it, even if you were that obsessive and you managed to do that, and you also managed to always do that whenever you got a new friend, you still have to deal with keeping track of who can see what. Like, so now you post some photos up there and you wonder, did I share this to my college buddies and my coworkers? Wait, is Ben a college buddy or a coworker? And so on.
And you know, and that's one of the things about the internet that's just, actually we should do another podcast about this sometime because I know we're running out of time, is the idea that it's all coming down to item and list management. I mean, my life has become, a job. I'm a filing. I have to file everything. Now I have to file emails. I have to categorize. I feel like that's all I do anymore is manage. I mean, like even the psychic weight of what's happening on my TiVo, like suddenly the idea of I can watch a show anytime has become, man, we got to get those. We got to watch those shows, man. We got to watch Cold Case or they're going to get deleted. Something that was supposed to be fun and exciting has now become a maintenance chore, you know? And if Twitter started putting in social context, then suddenly tweet maintenance would become one of my items, you know, that I have to do. I think I can see why people just kind of back off and say, I'm opting out.
Yeah, I just yesterday somebody was telling me, we have a newsfeed feature in Windows Live Spaces, and a guy was asking me, isn't it a bug that we don't keep track of what you've read and what you haven't read? And I said, we don't want to create yet another inbox that has, you know, you haven't seen the last 50 messages from your friends, 20 unread or 30 unread.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like RSS reading. There was, at first when you start reading RSS feeds, like having an RSS reader actually saves you time because now I can go to one app and track these 10 blogs.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you don't hit it for 3 or 4 days and it tells you, you have 50 unread items. And then it starts going from, wow, this was saving me time to, wow, this is becoming a chore.
You know, a really great feature of one of your, you work on RSS Bandit. I'm not sure if RSS Bandit does this, but Feed Demon, I just saw this brand new dialogue a couple of days ago where it said, you have 24,107 unread items. And it put a big fat red button and it said, don't you think it's time to just push the big red button and mark them all red? It says, it's not email. And the dialogue is just, it said it just like that. Hey, it's not email. You don't have to read them all. And I was like, rock on. Thank you for releasing me from the chore to go and maintain this crap. Well, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you sitting down with me today.
Yeah, it was good talking to you, man.
All right, this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we will see you again next week.